Welcome to our podcast, the completely unnecessary podcast. October 25th, 2022. That's Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about, I don't know, video game stuff. Early Smash Brothers footage revealed. We have a robbery of a game store, unfortunately. We have television Amico confrontation stuff. That's always fun. We have a Patreon poll topic. And your voicemails. We did okay, Ian. It's a little chillier. It's a little bit more fall weather.
We're hanging in there. I do love the chilly fall weather. It was warm in the afternoon yesterday, and then by about 5, I actually closed my front door for the first time.
I put the furnace on
this fall. Wow,
on Sunday night.
Okay, that's a little intense. I don't
know. Hey, it's true. Came back from Retrobalooza, and it was on Sunday night. I'm like, this is chilly. I said, this is furnace weather.
Whatever, weirdo. If you like being warm, that's fine.
No, I like to not have my nipples be so hard I cut a fucking ruby in half. That's what I want. Real quick, thanks to Retrobit. We didn't give them a shout out. After PRG, they gave us a couple of nice little goodies here.
I was actually very excited to receive the Avenging Spirit one. It's the first Game Boy release, I believe, they've done.
Re-release.
I would love to see more of the expensive Game Boy games get re-releases. This being a Jellico game, there are some other expensive Jellico games that I think could be ripe for re-release.
And they also gave us the re-release of Battletoads and Double Dragon. Very uncommon game!
Yeah, I love that they're picking these rarities to re-release for inexpensive.
Sure, I have full color manual, and you even get a little acrylic cartridge stand. So,
and I'll mention real quick, they do have the Genesis Valis collection going up for pre-order today. I love that series of games. It's Valis 3, Cid of Valis, and Valis 1.
Sure. So thanks to them for giving us those goodies there. I went to Retrobalooza this past weekend. I talked about how much I hate airports and flying on the exclusive podcast we do before this recording, patreon.com/CUpodcast. But Retrobalooza was fun. It was nice to be back with Norm, Pixel Dan, Gerard. We were hanging out.
That's a good group of fellas.
We love hanging out. We always go to Twisted Root, good handcrafted burgers and good milkshakes. And Andre. I went to Andre Meadows, Black Nerd Comedy.
Oh, he was there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Andre usually tries to come out. We went to Cheddar's on Friday night. I'm going to tell you, I can't legally say that Cheddar's has fallen off, but they don't have nachos anymore. The prices got bumped up a little bit with the pandemic and inflation, and I was disappointed about that. And, yeah, it just seemed like it lost its luster a little bit. But the waiter did give us an extra round of the honey croissants.
Wow. What a hero.
So Andre was all in his glory with that. Those are good. But then we go to the Twisted Root Burger place, and then right literally a block away, block and a half, we walked to Free Play Arcade, which is one of the nicer, if not nicest, barcades I have been to.
Free Play Arcade, it's called?
Yeah. I believe they have 3 locations.
And this is Houston?
No, Dallas-Fort Worth.
Dallas-Fort Worth.
They had a good variety because it was like good proportion of, like, they had about, I'd say, 30 pinball machines, good amount.
Yeah.
Pinball machines from most, you know, 90s modern stuff like that, the last 30 years.
Was it called Cidercade?
No, Free Play.
Literally Free Play? Free Play. Okay, where is it?
So they had a good mixing of, you know, the classic era, you know, late 70s to, we'll say, mid 80s stuff. You got your Donkey Kongs, you got your Track and Field, they had a Budweiser Tapper, you know, things like that, you know, got your Galaga. But then they even had, like, esoteric ones like Pot of Gold from these companies that just came up and were gone within a couple of years.
You know,
like, that's probably a game I've seen once in my life that I saw again.
Something like Bagman, which you see every once in a while.
Or they like a weird Taito maze game where you're a rocket ship, you're chased by missiles. It's incredibly hard. None of us could beat the first level. So the stuff that you would almost never see. So I'm going to play that stuff because I've never seen it before. Besides NBA Jam, besides Ninja Turtles, you know, besides, you know, X-Men arcade game, you know, besides all this stuff. And, you know, and they had, you know, they'll have, They had that modern vector graphics one that's a spaceship one. It's like a big four-player one. I forget what that's called. You probably have seen it. And then, of course, you're going to have DDR. Gerard's great at DDR. I'm awful. And then
got some pinball, too.
And they even have, like, the hand ones where you tap the hands where it goes out in a circle, like the Japanese machines. And they had a bunch of upfront fighting games and candy cabs. They had about 10 or 12 of them. So, I'd say the best proportion of types of games I've ever seen. And you can, and because of that, like, you weren't almost never waiting for a machine as well. It was good. It was fun.
They had Theater of Magic.
What's that?
Theater of Magic.
We didn't get a chance to play the pinball because it's less interactive. So me and Norm played NBA Jam twice. Norm, you got to bone up on your NBA Jam skills, buddy. You got to bone up on them. Just say that. I'm not going to yell at you like Stuttering Craig yelled at Chad when me and Lance beat him, crushed them 10 years ago at MAGFest. But you got to do a little bit better.
What a weird little guy that one was.
Which one was?
Not Chad. No.
Chad's fine.
Which one?
Chad from Screw Attack.
No, Chad is fine. The one that yelled at you.
The one that yelled at me from Screw Attack?
Yeah.
I don't remember when someone yelled at me.
No, you just said the person who yelled at you.
Oh, Stuttering Craig.
Stuttering Craig, yes.
Oh, he didn't yell at me. He yelled at Chad because they lost.
Gotcha.
And Craig like...
I meant Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Chad. I like Chad.
Craig is super competitive.
I like Chad, yeah.
And owns
he gets way too competitive.
Owns an NBA Jam machine, so it was me and Lance, and I'm pretty good at NBA Jam. I don't think he realized that Lance is actually really good at NBA Jam and probably, I think, owns the machine, so... Yeah, that video used to be up. It was like RetroWare versus Screw Attack at NBA Jam. It's online, and it's good to see how upset Craig gets. But whatever. Anyway, that was like...
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. It was Craig. He's very, very competitive.
When you said little. I was like, no, he's tall. He's like 6'3".
Oh, 6'4". I was just being silly.
Yeah, he's very competitive. You hear about this Happy Meal Toys for Adults coming back?
Yeah, I mean, that was a few weeks ago. I actually have one. But the important thing is that they are trying to scalp them now, apparently. And someone...
scalp the entire meals or just the toys?
The toys.
Okay.
And I read something somewhere that said someone was trying to put like three sealed ones or four sealed ones online for $300,000, which is dumb. And I hate these articles that like portray someone asking an absurd price
versus
for things actually selling for an absurd price. One unopened toy from the adult Happy Meal is listed for $25,000, while another is trying to sell three for an insane $300,000. While those listings haven't received a bid yet, another auction did sell 150 toys in bulk for $2,400. That's obviously significantly less than the others, but at 16 per toy, it's still a profit next to how much each cactus plant market box costs.
So, Pat, man, that's like, what is that, $18 each? What the hell is that? Something like that. It's not $20 each. That'd be $2,000 or so, right? Something like that. What is that, Ian? I don't know the math.
I'm looking right now.
To do the math. Whatever. So the point is that this is like Funko Pop plastic.
$16.
Like, that was close, Pat Math. Funko Pop sort of stuff, plastic little dolls. You know, you have a why is there four eyes on
by that? Cactus Flea Market. I don't know. I guess that's their design
what
thing.
The hell is that?
I guess that's their
There's
design.
There's a four-eyed Grimace, four-eyed Hamburglar, four-eyed whatever. What's the bird called?
Birdie.
And then what the hell is this a McDonald's?
That's an old weird Ronald McDonald.
That's Ronald McDonald?
That's Ronald McDonald.
That's like Pac-Man.
I know. It's very what? Strange. I know.
That's not Ronald McDonald. It's not a clown.
It's what they say.
They haven't used Ronald McDonald, though, in forever. Easily over 10 years. They haven't used Ronald McDonald as a mascot, I think. I think that's pretty much passe at this point.
Really? I haven't.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen the commercials?
No. I mean, I don't watch enough TV.
It's Cactus Buddy, Ian. That's not Ronald McDonald.
Oh, okay. Cactus Buddy.
In what world is that?
I don't know. I thought that was just... I realized it doesn't look like it. I thought it was just some weird fucking attempt at Ronald McDonald.
It's not a clown. It's a yellow thing.
Oh, no shit. I'm aware. Just don't know who it's supposed to fucking cover.
It looks
cover.
Like the original Pac-Man on the box art, but with, you know, where he looked like a, I don't know, without the big pie mouth. I don't know.
Anyway, moving on.
I just think it's like, this is just obviously for collectors, and I'm just weirded out that someone would get an adult Happy Meal. I would love it, but like without the scalping attached to it and the weird, I don't know.
Yes.
Everyone likes a little, I guess, knick-knack.
All right. It's enough on McDonald's toys.
All right, Captain.
Yeah, that's me. This is interesting news. Every U.S. PlayStation 2 game manual is now scanned in 4K. This is from Kotaku by Lovey Winslow. Yeah, that's just interesting. A game preservationist called Kirkland seeks to preserve that nostalgia for posterity by creating high-quality scans of the manuals of lore. He's just finished uploading his complete set of U.S. PlayStation 2 manual scans. What's incredible to me about this is not just the time involved in doing this, but the fact that someone was able to access a complete PS2 collection, because PlayStation 2 is really where like full set collecting just goes fucking stupid. Like there's no one's doing it, I don't think. So that's interesting.
But how many would be obscenely difficult to come by, you think?
There's a handful. There's a handful of them.
Okay. A lot of it's sports trash, probably. Like a good chunk of it.
I mean, it has its rarities.
How many is in North America? I'd say over 1,000.
Yeah.
Like 1,500 North American PS2 games. Is it 2,000? I always forget.
I think it's like 13,000.
Not 13,000.
Or 1,300, sorry.
How many North American? 1,850.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. I knew it didn't quite hit 2,000. I think with everything altogether is like well over 2,000, though, obviously. So 1,850, not counting variants. Entire collection is comprised of sealed first editions. Okay, so there's one collector that has them all. The only greatest hits titles allowed are ones that added additional content. Oh, I see. If they add additional stuff.
If the manual added another page or something like that.
Or maybe the game added extra stuff?
No, they literally just mean like if the manual has extra stuff in it. Which would probably mean the game had extra stuff too.
I was going to say,
but if they're scanning manuals, they would only scan a greatest hits manual if it is significantly different from the first.
I'm referencing a 10-year-old article talking about how they qualified it for the first two game. This is something different. This is talking about how
that they would make sense.
It.
Sure. So like the Devil May Cry 3 greatest hits would be counted, whereas the first one wouldn't. Would do both.
It's
of them.
The content is actually different. That makes sense.
Only a few of those
because I count. You know, like the Super Mario Duck Hunt is a different title than Super Mario and Duck Hunt being separate. It's a different title there. That's cool. Thanks for doing it.
Yep.
We have an update that we updated during the podcast where I didn't hit this button.
Update.
Platinum Games. Bayonetta voice acting shenanigans going on. So Platinum Games put out a tweet in support of the new voice actress, Jennifer Hale, saying, "We at Platinum Games offers our sincerest appreciation to everyone who's contributed to creating Bayonetta series over the years, as well as the community that has served as its foundation. We give full support to Jennifer Hale as a new Bayonetta and align with everything in her statement. We ask people to please refrain from any further comment that would disrespect Jennifer or any of the other contributors to the series." So what had happened was Helena Taylor said that she was only offered $4,000 for prize role. Platinum Games said, whoa, wait a minute, that's not right. Put out the statements that was corroborated by everyone. And then Helena Taylor had to backtrack and say, okay, maybe it was more than $4,000. Maybe it really was $15,000. So bad spot. And
this is a classic example of a problem being brought to light that needs to be addressed. And that's the generally low pay and no residuals that voice actors receive for what they do when they, you know, are so much of a character, so much of being a part of a character. But it was brought to light by the wrong person to do it, who, lied by omission. And I think that what she said about the new voice actor was unnecessary.
Well, she didn't lie about omission. She just lied.
Sure.
She straight up just lied. And she also lied about how much.
So when she brought that price up, the statement was later clarified that that was for a cameo appearance.
Yeah. So, okay. So either way,
she lied. I'm just saying she lied. Yes. But I'm just saying that one was by omission.
Yeah. She was offered a lot more. She was offered from a voice actor saying well more than the standard rate. They said per hours of session. So the voice actors, by and large, what I saw were like, what is she talking about? And then I think that's where I read. Yeah. She was offered a cameo after she declined to come in as the main character.
Right.
$4,000 for a cameo is better than nothing. I guess they wanted to have her in as some show of respect for it. So yeah, it's been a mess. The game is now getting reviewed and it's out there. It's good that it also shows is how people will just jump to, and I'm not saying you should always take what people say seriously, but you have to have different facts for these stories. You can't just say, well, Platinum Games is only $4,000 to reprise Bayonetta, and that wasn't true. And so you have to wait till more facts come out and just jump down and go after Platinum Games, because she was trying to hurt the entire franchise. And the valuation she gave, that I saw the people say, which is crazy, saying it was like a franchise worth $450 million, and people are like, no, it's not. This is not a hugely popular game.
No, it's a cult hit.
So like it's just, the whole situation is just strange.
It's got an 89 on Metacritic, a lot of nines, a lot of tens. People seem to be enjoying it.
Yeah,
so there we go.
And harassing the new voice actor is just ridiculous.
Yeah, that I did not like.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. I don't have a transition to go to ultimatetenor.com, but if you go there, you can get the books, Super Nintendo and NES, next to Bob the Brain Heenan, the GOAT. You got RBI baseball stickers. I didn't sell out of those at Retropalooza. I usually do. The RBI baseball stickers. Oh. I brought about 15 or 16. I didn't sell out. We have the pins, the stickers, the limited t-shirts if you're size small. We got the smalls left, and medium My Man shirts. If you're medium or small, we have the shirts for you.
We sure do.
At ultimatenintendo.com. I have no conventions to be at until December. That's great. I'm going to be on Twitch Wednesday. Shocktober continues, the last week of Shocktober. Twitch.tv/ContraCode. Ian will not be there.
No. Nope.
Unfortunately, he will not be there. And then I'm on Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry. Miniclip has shut down its servers for its games, except for a couple. I have no familiarity with Miniclip at all.
Why is this up here? I don't know anything about it either.
This article was sent to us. So this was an early, this was 2000s Flash games.
Yeah, basically it was like a Flash game site.
I'm guessing at some point it was popular. It's UK based. I don't know about it, but it goes to show you how
kind of like a Newgrounds, you know, a dumping ground for like Flash games and small games and stuff like that.
They got a lot of tweets, 21,000 likes. Rest in peace to a piece of your childhood from Barstool Game Time. Miniclip has officially shut down all its web browser games. 8 Ball Pool and Agario are the only games available. No more Commando, no more Raft Wars. Your childhood is over. So I didn't grow up. I mean, I was in my 20s then, so I can imagine if you're a kid growing up with this stuff and playing it on the computer every day. It's for us, it was shareware, you know, 500 games in one or whatever, 100 games in one. For other kids growing up, you know, the Zoomers or whatever, they played these Flash games or web games. That's what they did. So it's gone. Hopefully, I mean, they're saved somewhere. People may have downloaded them, play them on your local.
Yeah.
Like how you can do on all the other
Flash stuff.
Yeah, Flash stuff.
You can still download it. Moving on to other sad things. SimCity legend Will Wright is making a metaverse NFT game on the blockchain. That's a really sad headline. That's Luke Plunk at Kotaku. We brought this up ages ago. Will Wright was saying he was pretty excited about the blockchain, and he was going to make NFT-based games. I think this may not be his first one, even. I think he had something smaller out prior. This one is going to be called Voxverse, and it's a social game where you mine stuff, build stuff, and talk to people, and everyone is a squat little voxel-based character. There'll also be real estate that you buy and own.
Real estate. It's always about real estate in these games. Be a virtual slumlord.
And then this is Luke Plunkett says basically what I've always said. The project ticks every box for something that should have been announced in May 2021, then quietly shelved 12 months later when the ass fell out of the market. And that's what we've talked about a lot before. A lot of these NFT projects that are just kind of popping up now, where everyone's just kind of having a chuckle at it, is stuff that was clearly in development. And you know, as you said, you throw good after bad, or you throw bad money after good money after bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're popping these out. I just don't see there being any real success here. And it's sad to me to see Will Wright, you know,
yes,
pumping an NFT game.
I got to read this couple articles here from Luke Plunkett here. I have to read this in the article. It says, oh, and it's also helping to sell NFTs. The game has been designed at Gallium Games, a studio focused on blockchain gaming, founded by both Wright and Carmen San Diego co-creator Lauren Elliott. What's going on with all these people just getting into the ship? It's really sad.
Know. Who was it?
Carmen San Diego co-creator Lauren Elliott also is in on this ship.
Awful.
But the Vox characters at the heart of the project aren't new characters. They're an existing line of NFTs, which include licensed tie-ins from stuff like Trolls and The Walking Dead. The Vox characters are sold by crypto firm Gala Games, who have spent $25 million funding Voxverse. That's this, I guess, universe of this shit?
Yeah, that's what I said. It's yeah, that's the name of it.
Jesus, God.
Mm-hmm.
This is just ridiculous.
That's bad.
Well, man. It's going to... there was an article I should have put in about how gamers have rejected every single NFT usage that's come about.
Oh, yeah. There has not been widely rejected.
So good on gamers out there. For getting this one right. They've all crashed and burned. Ubisoft ones. What other ones have crashed and burned? Square Enix is trying to do their shit. I don't think that's
going
to work out.
Yeah, but I don't think anything's going. Starbucks. Remember when we talked about Starbucks?
Has Sega tried something with NFTs?
Yeah, they did.
They tried. They're doing an NFT game. They're doing one. The last article I saw, you know, Sega's, this is from GamerNet, Sega's new blockchain game is doomed to repeat history. So that's going to be a failure. They're all going to fucking fail. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's just sad, Ian.
It's bad.
You know, it's not sad. Sakurai and his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
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 Did you see this, Ian? I watched some of this. This was fun.
Yes, I did. Some of the early Smash Brothers stuff was interesting. I like the people shapes. Red man, blue man, green man, and silver man up there.
Dragon King the fighting game. That's what it was going to be. And it's, early prototype footage, four-player action. It's Smash Brothers. They're
It's interesting to me. I never knew that Smash Brothers was supposed to be something else before it became Smash Brothers. And what a genius move that was. If it had come out as Dragon King whatever, people would probably remember it as a cult favorite.
I was going to say, I think it still would have been popular, like semi-popular. Sure. So this is really
like
interesting.
It'd be a cult hit because it's got it's got interesting game mechanics, but I don't think it would have taken off nearly as much as it did when suddenly you have a Nintendo fighting game.
It would have depended on what characters they would have came up with it. Like if they created interesting characters for it, like how with F-Zero they created all new characters, maybe there would have been one or two that stood out that would have been like Nintendo favorites.
Sure.
But yes, it would not have been nearly as popular. No. It would have been like, I don't know, what's a Nintendo first party game that was popular but then faded away? I don't know, like 1080 snowboarding or something. That was popular for the time, and then it faded away.
Yeah.
But then it was interesting because they revealed in here that like there were retailers were not on board with using Nintendo characters. Like they said, this is not going to be good.
Really? Yeah. Retailers weren't on board with
it? I believe that's in here, yeah.
Interesting. And I guess this is not new information, the article says. It's new to me, but I guess it's been known and there's been some blurry screenshots. But basically just to get like video from the guy himself is pretty cool.
But interesting because it echoes things that I saw happening at a time that I didn't like with fighting games, how fighting games in the Midlands were coming overly reliant on memorizing combos and how that was not intuitive. It made a huge barrier level of entry.
Sure.
And how one of the reasons Smash Brothers are so popular is because the controls are so simple.
Easy to get into, but hard to master.
Controls are the same. Controls are the same for every character.
Yep.
That is super important, but then the behavior of the characters differs, but at least you can learn the moves and learn it.
Yep.
You can learn any character probably within a day or two of playing, like, and getting pretty decent if you practice with it at Smash Bros. Just learning how each one functions. And with, like I said, Killer Instinct, I could barely use one character in Killer Instinct. Like, I can barely use one. I will never know how to do all the combos and breakers on everyone else. Like, I never will get into that. I always liked the games that were more intuitive fighting games like Tekken, where you can pick up and learn things. Yes, there's special moves, but at least I can get the basics down. Things like that.
Love me some Tekken.
Yeah. And then Smash Bros. Is super simple, and that's why they said that we wanted to add like the training modes to this and just make it really accessible as Nintendo's first, you know, fighting game.
Right.
And yeah, it was a nice little 8-minute video. I like Sakurai's couch. It looks very comfortable. A nice leatherish looking couch or cloth couch. There you go. And then there was a second game mentioned that he was more excited about. What the hell is it? It was a little camera game where you switch cameras. Stealth and Exploration RC Robot Adventure game was proposed. And I actually said at the time I was more excited for that one. And then obviously that one never got going.
Right.
Maybe we'll see it in the future. The original Five Nights at Freddy's game. Yeah, right.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Let's talk about some analog news. This came out right when we recorded the last podcast. We missed it. Analog, makers of fine FPGA consoles, formerly making nice Neo Geo stuff way back in the day. They're doing one final run. Well, there's three announcements. The first announcement, this happened on the 16th, for pocket pre-orders. 95% of all open pre-orders B and C will ship before the end of 2022. Yay! So
that's,
there you go.
Good to know, because I think they were projecting into 2023 for C. So it's nice that people will get some of their orders earlier than they expected. The second announcement was the pocket cartridge adapters will be available for pre-order for $100 on the 21st. This one is contentious. So these were originally supposed to be $29.99 each. I think that was something that they had mentioned. I could be wrong.
Yeah, more importantly, you could order them separately.
Well, initially you were supposed to be able to, but the only one they ever released so far was Game Gear.
So
I believe Game Gear was $29.99.
So it's Game Gear. It's what's the other two?
No, these are not the Game Gear ones. This is Lynx.
Yes.
TurboGrafx and Neo Geo Pocket.
So those are the four.
So the first one, the Game Gear one, was you could pre-order it when you pre-ordered the system and it came shipped to you, and that one's been available. These three, I believe, were initially supposed to be available separately, and now they are selling them all in one package.
That's not right, because you're not going to have someone that has all these original games.
Yep.
These are three extremely different systems. Yes, you could be a fan of all three, but the odds of one person being a fan of all three and having enough games to justify the purchase, that's a much lower amount of people.
I purchased them. I was not exactly happy with the price. It's one of those instances where it's like I felt like they got me by the short hairs. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to begin with, and I would have gotten all three. But what was the original price for the
30 bucks? Well, Game Gear is still 30 bucks.
30 bucks. So this is 30 per adapter plus a $10 premium plus $20 shipping fee.
Let me give you an example. Like I was gung-ho on two out of the three. Like Atari Lynx. Yes, we need a better way to play that. To make this a Turbo Express, basically, yes. I own maybe one or two Neo Geo Pocket Color games, and that's because I bought them just here the way I've never played it before. So I would have no frame of reference for that.
Sure.
And Ian was probably like, well, I'd be into the first two, TurboGrafx and Neo Geo Pocket Color, but maybe Lynx, maybe I'm not a Lynx fan.
Yeah, exactly. And I have been looking at Lynx games because I knew the adapter was coming out and I was going to buy it. But yes, I just think it's...
I own like 30 to 40 Lynx games because I've come across them, and I think it's a really kitschy, cute system that didn't get its date in the sun like it should have.
Sure.
But it's it's a bad decision to do that. Unless, I mean, well I don't know if a flash card exists for Neo Geo Pocket Color.
It does.
So
my buddy makes it, actually.
I would be forced to get a flash card in order to justify the purchase of getting all three. Otherwise, I have no personal use for that Neo Geo Pocket one. But okay. Sure. Either way, it's good that they're finally come available because they're now, what, a year and a half after this was released? When did this originally come out? Was it early
2021.
Yeah.
So it's fall of 2021.
It's only been a year? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. But at least you're going to be able to get them.
Because I took it home. My first trip with it was when I went home for Christmas and then got COVID. And then the third is they are doing the last run of Super NT and Mega SG. They're doing them for $199. I am tempted to do the super, get in on the super NT run. I'm tempted
to do the Genesis one. Cross.
So I will say that, I mean, I do. I love the super, the Mega SG. I think it's great. Mega SG with a flash cartridge, and I'm in business.
Yes, they did send us a one of each to review.
You took the Super NT, and I took the Mega SG. The Mega.
So maybe we'll crisscross. And we'll do the
other. Right. So yeah, those were provided to us for free, but I do love the system. It's a very system.
Yeah, if I'm playing it, there's nothing else you can ask for about that, really. I mean, going forward, that's what's going to help keep this stuff alive, for sure.
And then lastly, real quick, I don't have a lot of info on. I've honestly just been using my Pocket to play Game Boy games and, you know, Game Gear games. I haven't updated it since the first update when I got it. But apparently there's lots of core stuff going on there, and it's turning into, it's becoming more and more kind of a powerhouse of a system where you can play just about anything on.
You just load all the cores on it.
Load the cores, load the ROMs, throw it in your dock, and there you go.
I don't have a dock, do I? Did I get a dock? You got the dock.
I bought a dock. I don't know if you got a dock sent with you.
Okay, I have to check that.
I think you did. And if not, you got that one dock from someone at a convention who made their own dock.
I thought they gave you that. I got one of those?
We each got one.
Really? Okay, I got to see where I put that.
Yeah, it was like a 3D printed homemade dock, but we each got one.
Okay. Okay, cool. I think I have my analog pocket folder up. It's right over there. I got to see if I got that. That'd be interesting to put on the TV. I think I originally tried that and had you had some, a little bit of issues.
I had issues with the original, with the dock when it was in like its review state.
Yeah,
after it got its firmware update, it was a lot more stable.
That's good. That's good. All right. And now some sad news. Pink Gorilla had sad news before. They got broken into last year at least once. There was an armed robbery that happens. This is up in Seattle. This is the store owned by Cody and our pal Kelsey. And there was a news clip about this. No one was hurt, thankfully. The person robbed games. They got cards. What was it, like Yu-Gi-Oh cards or whatever? And scary. And it's a shame. And you know, this happens.
Armed robbery in the middle of the day. It's awful, and I feel for my friends, and I don't really know what else to say about it. I'm just very happy everyone's safe.
Metal Jesus commented, this is terrible news. Sadly, parts of downtown Seattle are just too dangerous right now. Maybe it's time to move that location to someplace safer. And that's what can happen when crime goes out of control. You'll see it get worse and worse when you know, if people feel unsafe, they'll move out. They'll move their businesses, they'll move out, and then it's like a downward spiral. So hopefully things are turned around in that area. And hopefully the person is brought to justice here, because unfortunately, if this stuff goes unpunished, it enables some bad actors to try to do more of this. So hopefully they find this person and bring them to justice there. Sad stuff. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by EarthySelect.com, your source for the finest Delta 8, Delta 9, and Delta 10 THC flower, oils, pre-rolls, vape pens, cartridges, and edibles. Their premium adult use products are crafted from organic cannabis and infused with pure and potent THC extracts for effects you can feel.
Delta 8, Delta 9, and Delta 10 THC products are perfect for relaxing, socializing, getting creative, and going deep in the game. Plus, they are hemp-derived and federally legal to ship nationwide. Let's look at some of their most popular goodies. Earthy Select's Delta 8 vape pens are packed with potent Delta 8 plus cannabis-derived terpenes. They have a stealthy, ergonomic design that gives you a quick hit with no lag, making it perfect for gaming. Each rechargeable pen has 1 gram of Delta 8 THC and is available in 4 great-tasting flavors, like Guava Kush or my personal favorite, Cherry Pie. I really enjoy these. They pack light and are excellent on the go. Earthy Select also makes THC gummies and candies that are organic, vegan, gluten-free, and taste great. They all come in different strengths, so you can start low and see what's right for you. The Delta 8 gummies can be really relaxing and heady, while the Delta 10 is more associated with feeling productive and creative, so it's great for daytime projects or an all-night role-playing session. The Delta 9 gummies are really impressive. They have real deal Delta 9 THC, and they come in sativa peach or indica mango.
They have a huge variety on their website, so check it out, earthyselect.com. All of Earthy Select's cannabis products are federally compliant, and they ship nationwide. Order online at earthyselect.com and use the coupon code CUP20 to save 20% on your first order with no limits. Must be 21 or older. That's earthyselect.com and use code CUP20 to save 20% on THC. Earthy Select. Select your adventure. All right, Ian.
Patrick.
A PRGE 2022. We both had a, we'll just say, a confrontation of sorts of a different type. I spoke at length last week about a
sealed
game speculator. They want to call themselves collectors or speculators, investors. Talking to me while I'm setting up my books on Friday night. And you had mentioned during my talk that I got confronted too by someone.
Yes. So we haven't done an Amico topic in a while.
It's been a few weeks at least.
We'll round up some stuff here. But yeah,
it's
first.
It's been a while.
God damn it. You're heavy on that today.
It's two. Last guy didn't do anything.
Okay. So yeah, I was confronted by one Amico supporter. Only one.
Set the stage, Ian. I want the.
I always do. So I was, Pat was gone. I think you were doing your panel or something.
Sunday.
This was
Sunday.
Saturday. This was Saturday.
So I did my panel on Sunday.
Oh, well, then it wasn't that you were walking gone. Around.
Okay.
You were walking around, and this guy comes up to me, and it's just Norm over on the far left side. Okay. And then there's this guy comes up to me, and shortly after, another guy like walks behind him, and the guy comes up to me and goes, whose idea is it to keep attacking Tommy Tallarico?
Whose idea is it?
I think the exact words were, which one of you? And he pointed to me and then pointed
to
like,
Norm?
Vaguely. No, he didn't point at Norm. He just like, I think he realized you weren't there and just pointed vaguely into the ether.
Real quick, what type of person, like, were they a man, middle age?
It was a guy. I would put him in anywhere from his late 30s to late 40s.
Okay, the prime Amico market, maybe
yes.
A little bit too young if it's late 30s.
Yeah. So it comes up to me with this real aggressive attitude and goes, whose idea was it to keep attacking Tommy Tallarico? And I was like, huh? And he's like, why do you guys keep going after Tommy? And I was like, he's like, I don't think it's good. I don't like it. I don't like that you guys make it personal. He's like, you guys make it way too personal. Tommy's a good guy.
Oh, there it is. Tommy's a good guy.
And I said, A, Tommy's not a good guy. That's bullshit. And I said, B, I said, he made it personal. And then we made it personal. I said, I don't know what you know or where you heard it from or when you jumped into this. I said, but you can go all the way back to the beginning where I was maybe too optimistic.
You said this is a system I would be interested in. That's what you said.
I said, I don't think it's going to succeed, but it based then on what he was wish casting. Mm-hmm. Had it actually come out, sure, I would have been interested in it. I don't think it would have succeeded, but sure. If it had an R-Type and a Burger Time and some shit on it, I would have bought it for the initial price point of $150.
Yeah, originally it was going to have R-Type and Burger Time and all these arcade games that were all lies, obviously. But like, if that was going to be the console, Ian's like, I'd be interested in checking it out.
I never thought it was going to be, you know, sell well enough. I figured a lot of it was going to be ports of other games, but I liked the titles he was mentioning.
If it was $170 only, also
$150 or $179.99. Right, I would have been interested. So I was like, you can go all the way back to the beginning. And I said, you can see that I was cautiously optimistic about it. And I said, it wasn't until he got angry at us not falling in line that he started taking it he started making it personal. I said he talked about Pat and I. He talked about my nervous tics and shit on the Atari Age forum. He was like, well, I didn't know anything.
Talked about my hair. Yeah. Talked about the clothes we wear.
So I was just like, so I said he made it personal first. And he was like, oh, I didn't know anything about that. And I said, then maybe you shouldn't be talking so authoritatively about Tommy Tallarico being a great person.
I would say, what are you basing Tommy being a good person on? I would be like, how is he a good person? What has he demonstrated that makes him a good person? Because you liked some of his composing back in 90s video games? You liked his attitude on, you know, the TV show he used to co-host? Like, what is so good about this person? That's what I would say.
So, so he was like, well, I don't think you guys should have covered the auction stuff. And I said, I didn't really want to cover the auction stuff. I said, but we would have covered the auction, whether it was Tommy Tallarico or not, because there was a dev kit being put up for sale for $20,000. And I said, in that segment, we were both very careful to not just beat on Tommy. We reported the auction. We talked about what was going up and how the prices were high. Had anyone sent us that and had it been a moderate news week, we would have still covered it as the main topic.
I didn't get into personal reasons why it's been told to me why Tommy needs money. I never talked about any of that.
And we won't. So, anyways, I basically at the end, I think he was kind of like, I don't think he was expecting me to come back and hit him all these points. Finally, he goes, well, you know, maybe you guys can have him on. And he like he suddenly changes his tune. And starts to try to be like Mr. Hyper Positive guy. And he's like, well, maybe you can have Tommy on and you guys can, you know, make up and patch it up. And no. I said, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
And then he's just sitting there like trying to find something to say because I'm obviously annoyed.
This is paralleling my thing.
And I'm clearly annoyed. And he's like, yeah, you know, I just think you guys could make it up and it'd be like a super team. And
fuck off, yeah. Super team.
And I was like,
yeah, I'm going to make up with someone who conned people.
Yeah. And I just I looked at him. And I said, it's not going to happen. Thanks for your time. And like, I just kind of shoot him away because there was a guy behind him waiting to talk to me. And that guy's like behind him. He's like, I felt like the guy behind him was about to like jump in and like try to save me. Like he was looking
there was
like
two guys to try to save me.
He was looking
thing.
Like he was like ready to just like pick the guy up and move him over. So, yeah, I mean, that was it. And I don't like to fucking talk too much about the drama, but it's just funny that people come up to you and with absolutely no knowledge of the situation, try to fucking browbeat you about
it. See, I knew that I was going to be approached by a sealed speculator. I knew it was going to happen at least once. I did not think in my head someone would come up to us about the Amico on Tommy's side. I didn't because you'd have to be so far fucking gone in your head. At least with the sleazeballs, with the sealed speculators, you know there's sleazeballs that are trying to save money. Like, sure. You know that's motivation. I did not think I would get someone so dyed in the wool on the Amico side to come up to us and try to defend Tommy in any way. I did not think that was going to happen. So, Ian, how long did it last? Like a few minutes?
Probably about 5 minutes total.
Okay, mine went like 25.
Yeah, no, this was probably about 5 minutes, maybe 10 at the most. It was not longer than 10. It felt like an eternity, which is why I think I'm being conservative on the amount of time, because it felt like it could have been half an hour, but I know it was like 5 to 10 minutes.
It's the same exact psychology, though, of my encounter where they try to neg you and like get you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To spin and say, well, you can make up positivity.
Yeah,
have
exactly.
Me on the podcast.
We can all be friends.
And I'm like, and that's why I said to the speculator, I'm like, no, I don't have to like you. I don't have to have you on the podcast. We're adults. We can just
agree like each other.
Yeah. That's fine. Growing up and maturing is realizing you don't have to be friendly with everyone. You can be civil with people, but you don't have to be friendly and friends with everyone you come in contact with. That's actually being mature.
Yep.
Not to acquiesce to someone because they're being aggressive with you or throwing energy at you that you're uncomfortable with. No, it's okay to be like, no, screw that. That's not acceptable. I'm going to return the energy back into your face.
Yeah. I don't have to be positive. We don't have to have an amicable end here. We can just agree to disagree and you can walk away.
Or you can disagree to disagree, but I don't care. Like, that's it. Like, you can just walk away and you can sulk. And yeah, in what universe would that happen? So meanwhile, Ian, unless you have more to say about it.
No.
You had one of the cultists did an interview. It's part of like these redemption tour things at all these cultists who all attacked us, by the way. Almost every single one of these cultists has personally attacked us or done individual videos about this.
Yep.
Or in the case of this guy, this piece of shit, one of the few people that went after Ian's medical issues and said that Ian was a fraud. So go fuck yourself. So this person.
Oh, they're all absolute sewer people.
They all are. Ale. This fucking asshole.
Hey, Pat Ian, fuck you.
So that piece of garbage.
They live in sewage. They drink sewage. They eat sewage.
Talk to our good pal, Review Tech USA. And I'm not going to watch this. They're trying to both lift each other up, and one's trying to make themselves higher than the other, and how badly they were conned by Tommy Tallarico, and how desperate they were to take us down a peg as part of this whole experience. The anti-Pat and Ian console is what the Amico came. I think you talked about that at one point.
Yes.
It became the anti-Pat and Ian console.
No one supported that thing because they thought that it was going to succeed. They liked the attention from Tommy, and it became something that people jumped on because they knew we were against it. So it was simply, it was a stance. It was an accoutrement, an accessory to hating us. And they tried to hide it all in ways. No, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, a certain author, a very famous author. I think solely chose to support the Amico because we did not like
it. A very famous and jealous author throw tons of shades at us during this. This is a semi-recap on the Intellivision underscore Amico Reddit. The only Amico Reddit at this point, because the other one redirects to this one.
Yes.
The ex-corporate one redirects to this one. This was someone named D-List a Celebrity, which is a great name. Said that Twitch stream is Heroes on Twitch. It goes fast enough if you watch it at 1.5x. Bro confirms that Tallarico sent his attack dogs out, and they were happy to be part of the Shill Squad. So one of the things we talked about was how well-timed those anti-Pat and Ian videos always were.
Yes.
Like, to the fucking almost minute when we put out a video, they had videos prepared to come out. Because we record the podcast on Tuesday, the audio comes out, but then the video segments come out at least a day later on that. So at the early, they will usually get 24 hours. They knew what we talked about, and they coordinated. I think from what I heard, they had a Discord to coordinate all their attacks. Between Shirtless Shill, this individual, another investor that never says they're an investor in Amico that does these videos, they all would talk in, and they would have their talking points that Tommy would send them out on. They had their marching orders. So when we put out a video, they knew that our video was going to get 20, 30,000 views. That was their counterattack to us.
Right. And their way to try to kind of latch on to the coattails
and just say that we're just trying to make our names on this and that we don't know what we're talking about. That was their point of view. When we were trying to give people the honest truth about what was happening, and we were a lot of times giving it way too much credit looking back.
Yeah.
We gave it more credit than we thought. We thought it would do better than what it would.
Sure.
We didn't think it would spiral into something like this. We didn't really think that. We didn't think it would become worse than the Coleco Chameleon. I don't think I ever saw that coming personally. Where it was outright, $17 million just gone into the ether. Never saw that coming. Never saw that. We just thought it would just come out and just bomb.
Coleco Chameleon had the good grace to fucking...
Had an endpoint.
To disintegrate before they could actually get too much into it.
Yes.
I mean, some of the stuff, like some of the people who were talking about having games on the system, they were jumping at the gun. But Amico was just successful enough in its progress to be able to get like a game running on it, probably an Android box and a shell.
Sure.
But there was more there to string it along. There was more bait on the hook for the Amico to keep it going.
Yeah, we have 100,000 in pre-orders from maybe Walmart and other big box retailers. We have all these relationships lined up with all these people. We have someone that helped launch the Wii. We have the guy that helped launch the Xbox. No, you fucking don't. Not enough to influence your company into actually produce something. Jay Allard was gone in mere for 2-3 months. He was like, this fucking sucks. I'm out. He was gone. Oh, a little crackly.
A little crackly.
On there. Going on. More with this. They were happy to be part of the Shill Squad. Bro didn't know about Intellivision, but online friends like Cyrus were hyped for it. Cyrus was one of the individuals that did multiple attack videos about us, but then would say, I don't understand the drama happening here, when they created the fucking drama and went after us personally.
Right.
They're fucking garbage as well. I feel like the real story here is how a sufficiently desperate con man with no standards for how to spend his time or how low he will go will be believed by a few lonely hearts if he says things they want to hear. That's D-List Celebrity is pretty much straight on. This is a great sociological experiment that would happen here. If you have someone that is, to them, charismatic and friendly and willing to give these people even 5 minutes of attention that no one else will, you can create this group, which we said was a cult. We're the first ones to call it a cult. Create this group of people that can come together online and have a great time talking about something that they think is going to reignite passion in their lives, at the same time giving them enemies that they could bond together over to fight back against.
Yep.
It's a cult. That's how cults react. They are irrational. They are irrational. They do whatever the cult leader says, and they don't question it.
Nope.
Until it goes way too far. And eventually, some eventually get out, but then the damage is already done.
Yeah.
On there. There's a couple other comments here talking about how Bro was always a bully. He doesn't need a hug. He was always a bully, and it's only a matter of time before he falls for another scammer.
Yep.
Whether it's in games or something else. Retro Bro needed a reality check long ago.
He's not smart.
And that's the one thing I'm going to say about some of this stuff. Can you trust these individuals?
No.
That gave Tommy several hours at least of free time, were not critical thinking at all. They overly trusting people. Can you trust these individuals then to talk to you about anything else ever without questioning their logic or critical thinking abilities or their motivations, more importantly? Like, that's one thing. Why are they motivated to talk about this stuff in the future? That's the entire issue to me. Is it clean? Is it unbiased? Or are they just trying to get in with the group? Are they trying to attack other YouTubers and think that that's going to be helpful for their career? Like what happened with Review Tech. Like, that's a reason he had Tommy on for several hours. That was of the main reasons he did those free infomercials, because he wanted to get back at Pat and Ian.
Yes.
And that was a
so
way to do it.
So many people thought that this was going to be the way to get back at us and to have something to...
A horrible hill to fucking die on.
This kind of feels a little bit like a victory lap.
I'm going to do a quarter lap.
Quarter lap?
It's a quarter lap. It's a quarter lap. I'm going to stop a quarter way through and grab a Gatorade. It is what it is. And we're not going to have a definitive ending to this.
Ever.
We might, but like, there's going to be maybe a lawsuit, or you're going to find out about an investor maybe going after them who felt defrauded maybe at some point. Good old Sudesh was owed $100 per console. And like, if he's never paid back,
forgetting about that.
So you're going to have something like that happen.
So much money.
But I had people at Portland honestly say to me, not following it like us, so is this thing, is this dead or what's going on with it? Like, there's some people that think that there's still a chance this was actually going to be like produced commercially and come out.
Well, I think there's a lot of people who don't pay attention to it like we do. And they, you know, they haven't heard any news from it, so they don't know if it's, come on, microphone. There you go. They don't follow it like we do. They probably had faith in Tommy Tallarico to do something. Mm-hmm. They just haven't heard of it.
Yeah. So. And they were in television fans from 40 years ago.
Right.
And were cautiously optimistic. And then they didn't realize that it would become an absolute disaster.
The Intellivision booth was fun. A lot of them were wearing Amico shirts.
Yeah. There was ironic Intellivision Amico.
Everywhere. Our friend Joe was wearing one.
Mm-hmm.
John.
John was wearing one, but there was a few other people that were wearing them. And they're some of the real victims, because the Intellivision name has been tarnished.
Oh yeah.
This is going to be the last big thing you probably ever hear about.
Yeah. Poor regular Intellivision fans who just want to play, you know, remote decently fun games on an awful controller.
They wanted that Night Stalker remake. They wanted the Cloudy Mountain remake. That's it. Those are the two games they wanted. Maybe a third.
Well, isn't there that's probably worth mentioning. I think it's a rumor I've heard going around. But Cloudy Mountain and I think Night Stalker are both looking to maybe get.
I heard some things
just
at
rumors.
PRG. At PRGE.
I picked up online.
I heard this at PRGE.
Yes, I know. Just saying, because I don't know who we're supposed to be talking about. If it's out there.
I just heard some things.
Yes. It's on the Amico message board, so there we go.
So there,
that's where I got it.
The cat's out of the bag. We weren't the first one to say it. We were waiting, but heard some things. Ian, we got a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you pay a little money and you get things such as the full video podcast, a monthly hangout, writing You also get access, perhaps, to the pin club, if that's what you're
Yeah, if you want to get an enamel pin for get you know for a good rate.
And we do bonus bits.
Yes, we do.
We record extra podcast just for you before we start the main podcast every week.
This was the first ever 50-50 split on this Patreon poll. We've had 50-50 splits where that I downloaded the data and they were not real 50-50 splits. They just rounded probably up or down. 50-50 split, Ian. I don't know what to do. In first place tie, they both, it's like the Olympics, you both get gold medals.
Yes.
Is grading or reselling worse for video game collecting? 50%. And in 50%, NES games we would like to see an official re-release of. So we have to decide which one are we going to talk about.
So I there's a handful. We're gonna talk about. I think we're gonna do the video games this week, and then an automatic pass.
We might have to do an auto winner next week because I don't know. We've never been in a situation before.
Yeah, we'll just do an auto winner for next week since we already kind of talked about collecting and stuff like that last week with Pat's confrontation. We figured we could just kind of we'll do the games one. We'll do the games one. And then we'll do the collecting one next week.
With the help of a certain NES guidebook available at ultimatenintendo.com, NES games we would like to see an official re-release of. So this goes back a few years. I remember having phone conversations with Josh from Limited Run, like early 2018.
Sure.
Right after I moved to Castle Country. We talked about Limited Run should probably get into doing licensed re-releases. And we always said that we both decided that Metal Storm would be the one to try. Because you want to talk about games that are hard to find, that are worth a lot of money on the secondary market, but are actually fun games that people would want to play.
Right.
So that's why we said Metal Storm should be the test one if Limited Run ever got around to doing that. And lo and behold, they didn't do it, but Retrobit
did.
Chose Metal Storm as the first sort of NES game that would be licensed re-release.
No, they did. They did two before that.
Oh, they did.
They did Holy Diver. For the NES.
Oh, that never came out here, though.
No, but I'm just saying it was still a re-release. And then they did R-Type, and they did Super R-Type and R-Type 3 in one cartridge.
Okay, I'm talking about NES games, North America, that never came out. It was the first one.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that was, they did that one, and they have continued to do many, many of them.
Sure.
Like we just talked about the Battletoads Double Dragon one. And it's great because what they're doing is they're picking... they're picking games that have gotten expensive,
sure,
in the collecting market. But they're picking good ones. They're being careful about what they pick. These are all games that people want to play that have been expensive. So they haven't, you know, re-released Supercars, which I like to bring up at all times.
Oh, for N64?
No, for Nintendo NES.
Oh, that's Supercars. Yeah. Okay.
You know, they're picking good stuff. So we were thinking, what are some games that we would like to see get a re-release like that, whether it's through Retrobit, Limited Run. There's some other places that are doing it, too. I Am 8-Bit does it. The first one that comes to mind for me is Gunknack, which I believe I gave 5 out of 5.
Yes, you rewrote it because the original review did not do it justice.
No, it did not.
It was not a good review. One of the reasons why we had a bunch of reviews rewritten for the third print run. 5 stars, it's a rare game. You legitimately cannot find this game easily.
Nope.
I don't think I saw a copy at Retropalooza. I'm not sure. I didn't look as much, but I didn't see one in passing at Portland. I don't think a Gunknack.
No, neither did I. Granted, I haven't paid attention to NES games at conventions in years now.
And it's weird that because it's not like a super late one. It says 1991, not super late. And it is legitimately the best shooter on the console, probably.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Obviously has some flicker issues, but it's unique. It's quirky. It's got a good weapon system. I believe Compile developed it. And it's one that more people should play. And these re-releases are generally not super expensive.
Sure.
Limited Run, at least, and Retrobit, I know their prices are usually just about $60.
Yeah, sure.
50, I think, was what Limited Run did. 40 or 50 was what they did for Shantae, the Game Boy Color Shantae.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the prices are reasonable, and I think that would get the game into a lot more people's hands. Another one I would love to see would be Shatterhand and the Power Blade series. Those are the other ones that come to my mind, like, very quickly. Games that have gotten more expensive over time that are actually fun to play that I think people would enjoy.
I love Shatterhand. I think I might have done the Shatterhand review. That was never a super expensive one, at least back in the day.
I think it's like $60 now.
That used to be like probably a $20 game, something like that, in that range. Shatterhand, what I think I reviewed that one. I think I reviewed all three of those. I mean, I gave Shatterhand 4.5 stars.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Another 1991 one. It's uncommon. It's not
really
rare.
Neat gimmick.
Absolutely. You get your little robot, little assistants, and you compare them together.
Yeah, you pick up different Greek letters, and sure. Depending on the combinations, you get different assistant robots.
And then you said, what was the other one?
Power Blade and Power Blade 2.
Power Blade. Power Blade 1, I gave 4.5 stars, yeah. Uncommon. Great Another game. 1991 one. What was going on in 91? I guess because the Super Nintendo was coming out, they weren't going to produce as much. But no, it was earlier in 91. That's a Natsume-developed game, title published. Super fun game. I think I actually like it better than the sequel, because the sequel is a little bit more linear, if I remember.
It is. I like the first one better, but the sequel is still a good game, and that one's genuinely expensive at this point.
I deducted it a full star. I gave it 3.5 stars, which is still a good review. But yes, I did not like Power Blade. Power Blade 2 was always the one that was worth a ton of money.
Yes.
Power Blade was like Shatterhand. Well, it's $20, whatever, $25. If I looked up Power Blade 2 now, I would probably expect it to be $700.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It used to be one that was like $300, $400. Power Blade 2... $750 or best offer, and that's a ripped up label. What?
Yeah, I should not have gotten rid of my copy when I did.
Well, you don't know it's gonna
explode
up. We thought, I mean, this stuff all peaked in 6 years ago at first. Let's see what it's actually selling at. But that's one I knew that was gonna be. That's like the Bonk's Adventure sort of thing, where it's always gonna be more money because it's rare. I have it as rare. It is a rare game. You don't really see that one too often. And that one came out in 92. So I guess these are all title published ones we're talking about, like for the most part. Some of these
Gunnack wasn't, Shatterhand wasn't.
Okay, I'm thinking about more of the later title ones we can get into.
Oh, sure. Like if you wanted, I knew you were going to bring those up. Yes. Like Panic Restaurant.
Panic Restaurant should absolutely get a license re-release. Absolutely.
Yeah. So should Little Samson.
Little Samson is a big one, and I'm almost shocked that they haven't had one yet for Little Samson.
Well, I mean, we're also just not mentioning, at least for these ones, that these are title releases, so maybe it's just not easy to get the title licenses.
Well, the title published, I don't know if it reverts back to the developer, Natsume, or not. I have no idea how the rights work or that. Looks like Power Blade 2 sold for, one sold $750, $800. Again, are they paid for? $800. So, $800, there's multiple ones. There's several ones that say $750, $860. So that's that's shocking to me.
Yeah,
there used to be only at least loose cartridge a handful of games that would reach close to $1,000. You had like your Bonk's Adventure, you had your Dinosaur Peak, you had your Steam Events, you had like your unlicensed stuff.
By the time
stuff,
I got out of it, I think I sold most of my shit in 2016, 2015, and I mean, there's very, very little up there. I mean, the games that we're talking about now being $500, $600, $700, I was getting $100, $150 for.
Yeah.
I think my Power Blade 2 with a ripped label, I think I got $125 for it.
Sure. Definitely Panic Restaurant. Like I said, Little Samson is just ripe for the picking because that's probably, based upon covers, the most famous of the higher end NES games that are like legitimately fun. I mean, Norm did a review of that.
A good game.
Yes.
A good game.
I'm like double checking because I would think like that would have got a re-release by now.
No, it has not.
On that.
Absolutely not.
Of course, the GOAT, Mr. Gimmick, when that's going to happen, a Mr. Gimmick license re-release.
Licensed re-release, yeah.
Yes.
That is in the works.
On a cartridge would be huge to get an actual cartridge. We don't know if there's cartridge ones actually coming out. Or obviously we know a digital re-release. A cartridge re-release would be nice to see.
Sure.
For sure. But either way, the fact that it's getting released, I guess we don't need a cartridge necessarily, but Mr. Gimmick is getting its day in the sun.
Yes.
Any other high-end ones? Bonk's Adventure you don't need because it's not as good as a TurboGrafx one. It's good, but the TurboGrafx one plays a little bit better.
I don't like the Nintendo. For me, it's the colors. Everything just kind of feels a little muted.
It's just the controls just seem a little bit less smooth. Like, not enough to I still get a good review. How about a Mighty Final Fight? That would be an interesting one.
That would be great, actually.
Very uncommon game. Good game. I give it 4.5 stars on that. What is that going for? That one used to be like, $100 game, like back in the day, $80 game. You know, it was one of those like the tier before Little Samson where it jumps up, several hundred dollars. on that. It was like a Gargoyle's Quest. It used to be. Sure. Maybe Gargoyle's Quest. Another Capcom one.
Yeah, that's a good game.
These are all games that are very uncommon.
Yeah.
Mighty Final Fight. What does that even go for nowadays? $300 or best offer. $295 or best offer. So it seems like the games have tripled in price.
Yeah.
From what they used to be.
I believe.
3 years ago. Like, every game has tripled in price. No, I don't think it's sustainable, personally. I think we're going to see a downturn about that.
Well, that's what we were seeing, I think, before the pandemic.
Absolutely.
Sure.
What about something like Little Ninja Brothers? You think that would be worth it? That one's a little
uncommon. Unique, but I don't know that it would...
Get the interest?
Yeah.
That's a cultural one. I give it 4.5 stars. A very interesting game. I'm just going through. I'm trying to think of the expensive games that would actually garner interest. Gargoyle's Quest 2 for sure. And then we're going to start to run out of popular ones, at least that have been covered online. Stuff like the Dinosaur Peak and Jetsons. You have the licensing issues on those. They're good games. But I don't know if you have that level of interest like you do with the Little Samson.
No, I don't think so. I honestly don't think the Flintstones games are very fun.
It's tough.
I've never played the Jetsons one.
You ever played Jetsons?
No, never played Jetsons. So yeah, I mean,
I think
those are more in the, they're expensive because they're rare, but I don't think anyone's really clamoring to play them.
I think you'll see Panic Restaurant for sure. I think that if you can get one of these title published games, Panic Restaurant has always been. I did review it back in the day with my friend Allison at the time. Rare game, 4.5 stars. One of those later ones, October 92, developed by Disco and EIM. I'm not sure what else they did there. I think that's what you're looking at here. Like those handful of games. You're not going to see like the Panesian games. Who the hell knows who has the rights to those? That's just trash. You're not going to see a lot of the Color Dreams games, I don't think, because like they don't play, 90% of them don't play well. There's like maybe like 3 or 4 of those Color Dreams games that are probably worth playing, to be honest.
Sure. The strategy for all of these companies right now seems to be pick the rare stuff that's fun to play and you're going to instantly sell a ton of them.
I got one that I think would be a borderline one I just turned to. Maniac Mansion would be an interesting case study to do an adventure game re-release. That's gone up too. A little bit. Not a lot, but it's gone up. The card's still not that much money.
Yeah.
$20. That's just an interesting one just because, I don't know, maybe not. Maniac Mansion. Well, it's Lucasfilm, as long as we got the Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back re-releases from Limited Run.
Right.
We got that one. We'll see. All right, those are some good picks. I feel like we're missing one, but I think we always go to like those later games that are like 4-star and above affairs that are hard to find.
Yeah.
And then there's actually not a lot of stuff like the Guardian Legend. It's not expensive enough, I think, to garner a re-release or known enough, probably.
It's a really good game. I think that one's borderline because it never got expensive.
All the Koei games are quality, but no one ever played them.
Sure.
Those are 4-star games, 4.5-star games. Like no one clamoring for Genghis Khan or Nobunaga's Ambition or La Emperor, but no. They weren't producing high quantity, some of those at all. Uncharted Waters wasn't.
I know Uncharted Waters is generally rare. Not rare. Is it rare?
It's close.
Yeah. I can't remember.
That and like Gemfire or like they couldn't have made that many of them.
No, Gemfire. Those were the ones that were. Gemfire was on other systems. So yeah, they were just pumping out like a paltry amount of them, I think.
I have Gemfire as very uncommon. Sure. Almost none of those Koei games are common except for like Nobunaga's Ambition 1, maybe Genghis Khan. Sure. Other than that, it's tough to find those. Genghis Khan we have uncommon, but yeah. I don't think there was, at that point in time, once you get into the 90s more, a few years, it's probably, those people probably would, you're right, go to Genesis to play stuff like that, or they'd be on PC, maybe, versus the NES. Like, yeah, who has their old clunky NES that want to play like these, like, French strategy games? You know, it just doesn't seem like it would be a viable audience, and it wasn't, obviously. So, well, there you go. If you want to learn more about some of these hard-to-find games, there's a certain guidebook here that, you know, you can learn about them. Today's portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by True Classic. They make t-shirts that actually fit and they are super soft. When you're bigger, finding the right t-shirt can be incredibly frustrating. Most t-shirts are too tight in all the wrong places or way too big and boxy, but not True Classic. True Classic has already helped over 2 million men get their fit on at an affordable price. Our listeners get access to the absolute best deal they offer. For a limited time, get 25% off with code CU podcast at TrueClassic.com.
Guys, you're wearing the wrong clothes. It's time to level up. Highlight your greatest assets with a t-shirt you can confidently throw on at any time. True Classic Clothing is made with every man in mind. You'll get that quality, luxe fit, and the softness you've always wanted but never received from those rough excuses for t-shirts. These things are so soft you'll actually want to wear them. I generally like to layer. I like to wear an undershirt when I'm wearing, you know, a t-shirt or a button-down, and these are extremely comfortable.
Sure.
They don't stop at tees. They are your one-stop shop for all things menswear, and they make it super easy to build out your wardrobe from polos and workout shirts with the same flattering fit to boxer briefs designed with a pouch to keep your package nice and comfortable. All of their clothing is long-lasting and affordable. And are you proud of your gains? You can accentuate those biceps with their activewear crew necks, their sweat wicking, and their anti-BO. And if you're worried about sizing, True Classic leaves no man behind. For any of the big boys out there, they have long body options. And for the tall guys, long body and triple XL sizing. And a pro tip, you can bundle your favorites with the pack builder on their site and save even more than the discount we're offering you today.
It's about time you get your fit together. Upgrade your wardrobe with True Classic. Get 25% off at trueclassic.com with code CUPODCAST. Free shipping is included on purchases over $100. That's 25% off at trueclassic.com with code CUPODCAST. Strengthen your wardrobe with True Classic today. True Classic. Look good. Feel good.
We got voicemails.
We do.
You go to anchor.fm/CUPODCAST. Go leave us a voicemail. Try not to overextend your welcome. 20 seconds in and out. That's the way Pat does it. Wait, what? <That's>... Here is the first one.
Hello, Pat and Ian. This is John Thompson from Munich, Germany.
Hey.
So do you guys remember the KFC console that was supposed to come out at the same time as the PS5? It has been 2 years since they've gone cold. Do you think it was only a marketing ploy after all? Or will it eventually fulfill the promise of being the most powerful console for generations to come? Bitterzen.
I don't know. They said it was going to come out, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they did say it was going to come out. I think it was KFC Gaming and Cooler Master. Cooler Master is a hardware manufacturer. They showed it, right? And then obviously everyone thought it was a hoax. Then in December, they announced that they were going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if they said that. Okay, they said it was going to be powered by an Intel NUC9 Extreme Compute Element. And it was going to have a warmer basket that you could put chicken
yes.
in.
Yes, you couldn't. It's probably not like an air fryer, but it's a warmer.
No, just a warmer basket. I also thought I read somewhere that they said they were going to consider just making it like a mini PC case that you could buy. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Either way, it never came out, which is silly that they would. I just don't know why they would announce it to not put it out. But it's 2 years past. It's not coming out. The joke is dead. No one wants this anymore.
I think it would still sell. If they made a few thousand, I think they would sell just for the notoriety of it. I think so.
Perhaps.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Christian from Virginia. Now I have one question for you all. Who should call the show now that Tommy Tallarico has tragically stopped calling the show? And I have one suggestion and one suggestion only. And his name is Zack Snyder.
Okay, then.
I do not want Zack Snyder calling into the show ever.
Hey, Suri and Paterino. Well, what's up all the people calling in?
The fuck? Super loud truck. I don't know what the hell that was.
Yeah, I felt the rumble.
Hey, Suri and Paterino. Well, what's up all the people calling in and doing voices? It's pretty lame. I mean, do they not have friends? Go hang out with your friends. I'm sorry, I don't know what that was. I'm going to turn that off. Yeah, anyway, Discord's annoying. Yeah, so these people, they're losers, right? Yeah, complete, utter losers. Oh my god, what's that? Stop! Stop! Oh my god! Hey, it won't stop! I don't even have AOL installed! Oh my god! Ah!
Goodbye.
Oh, toy. So silly.
Wow, okay.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is James from Chicago, long-time listener, first-time caller. Recently, you guys were talking about what Konami properties you'd like to see come back, either as a remake or revamped, redone, whatever it's going to be. I kept waiting for you guys to say it, but you didn't. And I think the game that would benefit most is, of course, Adventures of Bayou Billy. If there's ever a game that needed redemption, it's that one. And while I would appreciate, you know, new Contra, new Castlevania, we all know that they're going to keep making those until the end of time. So try to get that one going. And then, of course, Mount Rushmore video game characters. Agree, Pac-Man, Mario, Sonic. And the fourth one, well, it's Bayou Billy.
I would actually love to see a ROM hack of Bayou Billy where they fix the beat 'em up section. If you fix the beat 'em up section, it's a good game.
It's a neat game. It's a neat idea.
If you give the enemies like recoil when you hit them, right, they don't just walk through your punches and kicks, and you lower their the amount of damage they can take. If you do all these things and make them,
you mean how much damage they can get?
Yes, how much? Yeah. No, how much damage they can take. They'll take a lot of damage.
Sure.
Like you have to kick them like fucking 15, 20 times. You do that, and then you make them less aggressive, like a little bit less aggressive. You have you bump it a star rating, at least. Like it becomes like a 4-star probably game at that point, versus what I probably gave it an average or 3 stars, just because it's trying to do all these interesting things. I don't know why they made it so much difficult than it had to be. It didn't make any sense to do that.
No.
At all. It's like so much harder than Double Dragon on the NES. It's not even close.
Hi, Pat and Ian. This is Joe from St. Louis.
Hey, Joe.
Home of an amazing food scene, but the worst style pizza in the country.
Probably.
Pat, thanks for inspiring me to do intermittent fasting over the course of however long I've been doing it now. I've lost 30 pounds. So if anyone gives you crap for being hungry on the podcast, yeah, stick it in their face because it works. A video game podcast. Mario.
There you go. Oh, stick what in their face? I usually get hungry around. Yeah, once you hit like now, I'm starting to rumble a little bit. The first, but
what is it? No eating after 10 and no eating before noon.
You usually go 16-8. You get 8 hours to eat in a day. It's up to your schedule. You can do it technically whenever you want. I usually don't eat until at least noon. Sometimes 1, 2, or even 3, and then I'll eat my last meal like 8, 9. Some people just don't say to don't eat that late. It really does to me. Doesn't matter as long as you still have the same window. It gives your body time to just to churn through all the other calories that you've stored. That's all. I usually just tell people don't eat breakfast. Just make it to noon, have your lunch, and that's it. And you're already well ahead of the game. Some people only eat one meal a day. I can't do that because I can't. You have to, in theory, get almost the same amount of calories. And that's tough to do in one meal. I've done it only like once where I was like, wow, I forgot to eat today. And it's like 8 o'clock at night. You got to like eat a lot of calories. But some people do that. I just don't do that. Some people skip a couple of days or once in a while. I won't eat for a day or two. And like, no, I don't do that.
That's
I don't
not really healthy.
But no, definitely breakfast is not good, for at least for my body. A lot of people, I do not run well after breakfast. My body's worn down. It just feels blah. I just feel like sluggish. And yeah, I don't need those calories early in the morning. I'm not doing anything. Next.
Pat, Ian, this is Matt from Rochester, New York again. So now that football season is underway, is there a place out in San Diego where you guys like to get wings at all? Obviously out here in Western New York, they're a hot commodity. I don't know about how they are in New Jersey. I'm just wondering what the general consensus is out in San Diego. Thanks, guys.
I don't think there's any place in Jersey that was known for wings. I'm trying to remember that. We never, like, people go, oh, let's go to Hooters for wings. But, like, I don't ever remember. There wasn't, like, a wing place, I don't think. That was at least was qualified. I don't know.
No, I don't really think there's any place that does good wings in San Diego. I do try them from time to time. I don't, you know, just poo-poo them without trying them. I do want to give every place a fair shot. Mm-hmm. But nothing good here. There is actually an Extra Napkins episode recently where we cover Dirty Birds, which is like the popular place around here.
I know who runs that.
And they're not good.
Oh. They're the crowd that used to be the people that used to run the bar at Shades.
Oh, okay.
And they opened that up.
They've got a lot of sauces, but like they don't fry the wings long enough. They're kind of like, as John D'Elia once said to me, it's like eating earlobes.
I think you said that a week or two ago. You brought back that one.
Yeah, it's a good.
They need to hire Ian for a consultant for a day. How do you fry your wings properly?
Fry these. Get the heat up. 5 minutes longer.
Get the heat up, or for 5 minutes longer.
5 minutes longer.
Is that it? No mushy earlobe stuff.
No.
Next.
Pat, Ian, this is Chris, upstate friend here in Prunedale, California. Just want to give you guys a good thank you for exposing the BS in the gaming world, taking on guys like Tommy Tallarico and this Mad Dog Collector dude that you were just talking about, and all the BS with this inflated high-end market and doing, you guys are doing a great service.
Thank you. Well, appreciate it. Yeah, we try. I mean, like, it gets tiresome, but someone has to. If not, I think the scene would be a lot worse off if people weren't pushing. Imagine if, I'm not saying the Amiga would have gained a larger foothold, but, like, if no one was being critical of the Amiga for the years and years was going on, it would have been a vacuum. It would be in this weird fucking vacuum, and I can't imagine that.
Hey, Pat and Ian, I just got done listening to Nothing Matters number 48. For all the non-Patreon members out there, that's where all the good bits are. So you know, for less than 3 soft tacos from Taco Bell, you too could be getting the good bits. Pat, I know, I'm sorry I brought up food. We all know you're intermittent fasting.
Yep.
But what I really wanted to get at is we could really use a Spike Meow House dub mix. Is there any CU fans out there that can mix one up? That'd be great.
Meow.
Cheers to Spike's health.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
Oh, yeah, boy. He's kind of sick again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Little guy.
Taking him to the vet tomorrow morning.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Jamie from New York here. Wanted to say I love the show, and so much so I bought the NES guidebook just a couple of days ago.
All right.
With baseball players upon us, my question is, what is each of your favorite baseball video games of all time? I love MLB The Show, but for me it would still have to be High Heat Baseball from the late 90s. The games were quick, and hitting finally felt realistic. Thanks, and let's go Mets.
Don't bring up the Mets. Don't tease me. I don't want to hear about the Mets.
That's too old. So my favorite baseball games, I love RBI Baseball on the NES. I think it's tons of fun. I also have enjoyed the show, but one that sticks out for me the most is MVP 2004 on the GameCube, PlayStation 2, or Xbox. It has Pujols on the cover. And I played a shitload of that with my friend John, my friend Alex, and I remember one very particular night where we sat down at like 10 or 11 with 2 cases of beer, and we did a sim season until 6 in the morning.
Wow.
And then my friend got arrested afterwards.
Why?
Alex, because he was too drunk and he tried to get into the wrong house when he got home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that disorderly conduct or breaking and entering, trespassing?
I have no idea.
Holy shit. How drunk? How do you even get to that point then? Staggering home? Hope it wasn't driving.
No, he was not driving.
What the hell, dude? Wow.
Yep.
All right. Interesting. Baseball Stars. Because at the time there was nothing else like it on a console. And I did not have any PC gaming experience at all. Like, I did not play a good old Earl Weaver's baseball.
Or what was the Sierra One Sports? It's like Sports News Baseball or whatever.
Oh, they had one?
Let me see.
But well, let's put it this way. You get all the nice simulation aspects, but the fielding and hitting would not be as good on those, you know, on a computer at that time in the 80s. But Baseball Stars,
Front Page Sports.
Baseball Stars got it all right. And create a player, manage your own team. That was I made a team of everyone in the neighborhood. I put myself as a player. Like, it was great. Amazing. And somehow the sequel did not improve upon it. They were just the sequel. I did not give 5 stars. I gave the first one 5 stars. I gave 4.5 the sequel.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Scott from New Hampshire. Just calling in wondering if you think we would ever see another Punch Out game from Nintendo on Switch. Hopefully. Big fan of Iron Mike. Always was since back in the day. I'd like to see him definitely come back to the game and reprise his role. I think he's a great underrated historical Nintendo boss. Thanks so much. Bye.
I think he's rated great. He's feared, like, as a boss character. Like, Mike Tyson is arguably the hardest video game boss from the 8-bit era. He's up there. You're not going to see it. Nintendo's never going to get in this again with a sports endorsement, like, because like they can turn bad. And it did with Tyson, obviously, with his legal issues and other things. And I don't think Nintendo would probably get into that again. And Ken Griffey was pretty clean cut, but they had the relationship with the Mariners. So that made sense, you know, owning the Mariners and saving that. Oh, that video was taken down by MLB Baseball. Norm did a great video about that whole relationship between Nintendo and the Mariners. You can read about it. You read about it in the Super Nintendo guidebook.
I think in terms of will they ever make another Punch-Out, I think the answer is no. I think the gameplay is too simple.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't think they would. I don't know that they would do one as a full release. I could see a digital game. I like Punch-Out, but it really is just pattern memorization at the end of the day.
How well did the Wii one do? That's still pretty well,
I don't know.
It?
And it's fun, but I they would have to make it really... They'd have to make it a big game. They would have to add some other modes to it. I think it's just too bare bones to get, like I said, a $60 release.
Okay. I think we'll see another Punch-Out eventually, but... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it came out, what, 2000, like 10? When did it come out, the last one? 11? And so, like, you had three games in the series, right? You had, what was it, 87. Super Nintendo one was, what, 93 about? Was it 93? Then you have one in, like, 2010. So you have three in about, what is that, Pat math? Three in about 17 years, 15 years. Three in 15 years. And now we haven't had one in like 10 years about. I think, yeah, eventually the nostalgia for Punch-Out will be gone. Sort of like F-Zero, if you're not careful. You got to put out a new game or else there won't be an audience left for it.
Right.
So I'm not saying it has to be like one every system, but hey, John Cena wants that F-Zero game. We got to do it. I'll do a few more here.
Hey, guys. It's Daryl from Buffalo again.
Hey, Daryl.
I had a question for both you guys. What was your go-to cartoon growing up? What did you guys enjoy watching the most? All right, guys. Have a good day. Hope to see you soon.
Well, I mean, the thing about back then, God, kids are spoiled because they can watch whatever they want. I was talking about with Dan about his son trying to explain, like, hey, we had to watch shows at a certain time, like once a week or once a day. You can't just watch 50 episodes in a row. I mean, obviously, G.I. Joe is my favorite by a good amount, but I love Thundercats. I loved Mask. At the time, Transformers got in there too. I love Jem. Not for shame to admit, I love Jem as a kid. Jem is fantastic. Ooh, yeah. What about you, Ian?
I mean, the answer is clearly it's Tom and Jerry. My ass would be in front of the TV anytime Tom and Jerry was on. Anytime I flipped channels and saw Tom and Jerry, I stopped what I was doing and
really?
I watched it. I love all of the Tom and Jerry episodes from the earliest ones up to and through the Chuck Jones era. I even like some of the Gene Deitch episodes, which are, there's only 12 or 13 of them, and they're those weird Tom and Jerry episodes that don't really look like other Tom and Jerry episodes. But yeah, I mean, that's easily my favorite cartoon.
What was your 80s IP cartoon that you liked? Did you have one?
So the only, it was Voltron. That was
Voltron.
Like,
I did like Voltron.
Voltron was honest. Like, I did not get into Thundercats. I did not get into He-Man. I did not really watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, I love these turtles.
I didn't get into that stuff. But Voltron I liked. Voltron I loved.
But that was gone within a couple, that was only on TV for a couple of years.
Sure, but that's
So you were super young.
Because
it was like 86 that was on TV around there.
I'm pretty sure some of it was in syndication.
Oh, it must have been syndication.
Yeah.
I remember the first run that they did, it was like 86. That's when the toys came out.
That's probably 86. When I first saw it, and I do have a couple of the original toys. But yeah, no, I think I remember it mostly from syndication, maybe
gotcha.
Up to 90.
Yeah, I remember not being seeing on TV past a certain point in time. Like once I got to be 10, yeah, it was like Ninja Turtles. That was the big one in the... late 80s to early 90s for me. Lamco checking in.
Hello, Pat and Ian. It's your boy Lamco 64 from Nottingham, UK. Just a quick question about Bloodsport. You guys are always talking about how much you love that movie. I grew up on that movie, all martial arts movies really, but Bloodsport always stuck out to me. I was a big massive Jean-Claude Van Damme fan. I don't know, just maybe have a chat about why you like Bloodsport so much, your first time you saw it. Anything like that? Cheers. Thanks, guys.
First saw it, I believe it was the family on my mom's side, like a party, do an Easter party. When we started with everything but the rum cake is good at these parties. You got your stuffed shell platter. You got your sausage and peppers there. You got that. It was on TV. TBS was playing it. TBS would run Bloodsport.
No, TBS was where I saw it first.
That's where I think I first taped it off TV. This is before TNT was even a thing. This is probably like 89, something like that. And TNT might have been just starting, but whatever. It was probably like 89, 90, a couple years after the movie came out. They probably got the rights to it, and we're showing it. That's how I discovered it.
Yeah, me too. And I, you know, my dad liked the movie. I remember like him walking by it one day and it was on and we like watched it. We have a VHS taped copy of the TBS movie.
So do I.
Yeah. And
then I bought the regular VHS years later.
I mean, why do I like it? I mean, it's easy. It's an extremely well-paced movie that is humorous, action-packed, has a few good performances from some of the minor characters. Great fighting,
great characters, all diverse characters,
all like that, that's what I love. A great tournament. I mean, it's just, it's everything I kind of want from a simple martial arts action movie. Good lead up, cool tournament, drama surrounding the tournament, happy, positive ending.
Yes. Thank you, Van Dan, for saving it and editing, as supposedly he did. Supposedly he was in the editing room helping edit that thing together.
That's what everyone says, yeah.
Because I can picture that being unruly, just all these fight scenes. How the hell do we edit this together? Well, let's have a couple of montages. Yeah. One for day one, one for day two. There you go.
Everyone loves a good montage.
Don't think about the tournament structure. If you want a real tournament structure, you got to see the quest when you only have 16 guys. It doesn't make sense for Van Damme to win like 10 fights, because otherwise that means like there's like 500 fighters. Yes.
Yes.
There's way too many Van Damme victories in this movie, but we all love Van Damme. That's why you want to see him. But yes, you can't think about that. There's a couple guys you don't see enough of, like the British guy. You don't see a win on day one. You should have, because he's featured in the intro. Yes. So either he's a sucky fighter and he couldn't pull it off, or something happened with his fight scene where they're like, well, because he should have won a fight because he got to day two.
Exactly.
Every other fighter you see on day two, you sin for the most part. You see win on day one, significant fighter. You don't see that for the British guy with his lackey folding his arms. Did you read the script yet?
No.
The script is fascinating because it has more than the ninjutsu stuff in it.
I should just put it on my reader and I'll take it on a trip.
Yeah. It took me years to track that down. I was like, oh, Bloodsport. Okay, we'll do one or two more here.
Let's do one more.
We'll do one and we'll check in with someone.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Miguel from Terceira Island in the Azores, Portugal. Oh. A fun video game fact. My city appears in the video game Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis when they visit the Azores.
Oh.
So a question for both of you. Is there a place that you saw in video games that you love to visit? A real location, and you can add a fictional one for fun. Thanks. Love the podcast. Keep up the great job.
Thanks, Miguel.
Sure. Yakuza 0 made me very interested in what late 80s Japan would have been like walk around. So I always thought that would have been kind of neat. That involves a little time travel as well. But it got me really interested in just the look and the vibe and the music and the, you know, the style of late 80s Japan. And then as far as a fake one, I'd like to go to Green Hill Zone.
Just to hang out with the bunnies?
Just to hang out.
No humans there, just hanging out?
It would be fun.
I'll do a fake one first. I don't know. I want to relax on Adventure Island.
There you go.
I want to have some fruit. Fruit is plentiful. They appear pineapples and eggplants and veggies.
But would you be safe? I mean, it's called Adventure Island, not Relaxing Island.
You're right. Got a jet set over there. Grab a couple of stone axes. Here's a weird one. Well, it's more based upon the movie, but it was a game. You know, the Warriors takes place, you know, it's 1979.
Sure.
New York. It's a fucking battle zone. Some of New York. New York was a scary place in the 70s and into the 80s from what people were saying. You don't want to be out at night, certain areas, a lot of areas in New York. But it just has that gritty feel of it. That would have been interesting to be alive at that time.
Sure.
When Times Square was like, hey, Times Square is even dangerous.
Right, yes. Yeah. Times Square was not great.
You know, I remember the peep show still happening. We took a bus to see My Fair Lady in the like eighth grade.
Still like 94. Nude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even in 94, before everyone just started cleaning it up and making it family friendly. That was still going on. It was still seedy into the 90s, into like probably the mid to late 90s. It was still seedy. Yeah. Before it went corporate. And then we're going to check in with someone that we like here for a second here.
Guys, it's Foxandra, and we got a problem. You guys are talking about Chris Pratt in the Mario movie, when what you should be explaining is who the hell you guys casted for the CU podcast voicemails the movie. In what goddamn world does fake Tommy sound like this?
Tommy Tallarico here. When I said the Amico was going to be delayed, it wasn't really going to be delayed. I just said that just to troll you.
What the hell is this? this? Did you guys turn Tommy into some busty skank like it's some mobile game? Not even the worst of it. Explain to me right this goddamn instant why my par sounds like this.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Buck Sandra from New Jersey. Renowned voice actress, according to Ian. I was listening to the segment the other day about Comic-Con pronouncing Smash Brothers. Listen, the only con I know these days is the con of my ex convinced me to date him for a year.
Tommy, what the fuck are you talking about?
Shut up! I'm recording!
Wow. Vox Andrew and Tommy connecting for a voicemail. Never thought I'd see the day. They're now... I feel endangered somehow that they're now talking to each other.
I don't feel safe.
I don't feel safe now.
Nope. We're not safe. We're in danger.
That was funny.
It was.
Good time. Intermittent fasting coming to close. I got a nice salmon piece that hopefully it isn't bad because I bought it on Thursday waiting for me. Should be fine. I sprinkled some lemon on top.
Yeah, you'll be all right.
It'll be fine. It's the one with less fat, and it's not the Atlantic one. It's the what's it called? Not the Kobe salmon. What the hell is it called? With a K. It's not. There's like three types of salmon there. There's like a super red. There's like a super red one with like almost no fat. And this one has a little bit of fat. It's like in the middle of it.
Salmon types. Yeah. Sockeye, Atlantic.
Not sockeye's the one that's like really pure. Like not a lot of fat, and it's like really red.
Coho salmon.
Coho.
That's with a C. But there you
okay.
Go.
Coho. Coho salmon at Sprouts. It's a little bit. It's not as pink as the regular salmon. Coho salmon. Yeah. There's less fat in it. So I think it was one that's less fat. I think it'll last longer from what people are telling me.
Yes, more fat. Yeah, more fat, the quicker it will spoil.
That's why tuna can last a lot longer because there's like almost no fat in it. I have a tuna piece too. I got to eat tomorrow. I'll do that. It'll be fine. I've never had tuna go bad before. Tuna's pretty hardy. People also ask, is coho salmon good quality? Its quality is still quite high. Yes, it's good.
All right, I'm gonna go home and make lunch.
All right, bye.
Bye.